Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo.
Today we are reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 16, entitled King Chitraketu Meets the Lord, text 40. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O unconquerable one, when you spoke about Bhagavad Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, that was your great victory. Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras, who are self-satisfied sages, worship you to be liberated from material contamination. In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavad Dharma to achieve shelter at your lotus feet. Please repeat after me. O unconquerable one,
O unconquerable one,
when you spoke about Bhagavad Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system
for achieving the shelter
of your lotus feet,
that was your victory.
Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras,
who are self-satisfied sages,
worship you to be liberated
from material contamination.
In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavad Dharma
to achieve shelter at your lotus feet.
Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As stated by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anabritam Anukulyena Krishna Nu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. The Narada Pancharatra also says, Sarvopadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. Hrishikena Hrishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. One should be free from all material designations and cleansed of all material contamination. He should be restored to his pure identity, in which he engages his senses in the service of the proprietor of the senses. That is called devotional service. This is also called Bhagavad Dharma. Without material aspirations, one should simply serve Krishna. As advised in the Bhagavad Gita, Narada Pancharatra, and Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Dharma is the process of religion enunciated by pure devotees, direct representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, and their humble servants in a disciplic succession. By understanding Bhagavad Dharma, one immediately becomes free from material contamination. Living entities who are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are loitering in this material world suffering. When they are instructed by the Lord Himself about Bhagavad Dharma and they adopt it, that is victory for the Lord. For he then reclaims these fallen souls. A devotee following the principles of Bhagavad Dharma feels very much obligated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can understand the difference between life without Bhagavad Dharma and life with Bhagavad Dharma, and thus he remains obliged to the Lord. Taking to Krishna consciousness and bringing fallen souls to Krishna consciousness is victory for Lord Krishna. Svai pumsham paro dharmo yatho bhakti radhokshaje ahoitaki apratihata yayatma suprasiddhati.
The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to be to completely satisfy the self.
Bhagavatam 1:2-6.
Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is the pure transcendental process of religion.
Omagyana timarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha.
I was born into the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him.
So throughout the Shastras, the Puranas, etc., we hear about Lord Krishna either in his personal manifestation as the Lord or in his various avatars fighting with various demons. Here we have on this wall over here, we see Narsingadev ripping the vital organs out of Hiranyakashipu. Or in the Ramayan, Lakshman and Ram and their cohorts, Hanuman, they are defeating Ravan, right? But Krishna killed so many demons. So he was victorious, we think. But that's not, as we described in this verse, that's not his real victory. His real victory is not killing demons. His real victory is when he can reclaim the fallen souls. In the section in the second canto of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is a very touching scene when Gopakumar finally makes it to Gokula, and Krishna sees him, and there's tears in his eyes, and he's saying, "Where have you been? My friend, I have been glancing at that path so many times, waiting when you would come. When will you give me your mercy? When will you give me your mercy and come?" So that's actually Krishna's mood. He thinks he has achieved a great victory if soul comes back to him. He is waiting for the mercy of that soul, of the Atma, to come to him. As we are thinking, we are waiting for Krishna's mercy, but Krishna is feeling that we give him our mercy, then we'll come back to him. So that's why Srila Prabhupada always said that it's not that Krishna wants us to come back more than we want to go back. For every step that we take toward him, he's taking 10 steps toward us. So that's the real victory for Krishna, is not, you know, killing so many demons. That's not very interesting to him. Of course, actually sometimes for his sporting, you know, he wants to exercise a little bit, you know, get a little energy off. So he has some leelas that way. But the real thing is bringing fallen souls back. And there's so many descriptions of that, of how many of, for example, there's the Ajamil, in the same sixth canto, Ajamil Lila, Gajendra Mokshana, the Avanti Brahmana, Valmiki. And Valmiki was a murderer. He was recovered by the Lord. where there is a instance, famous instance of Bhakta Angarenu Alwar, who was actually was a devotee who then fell into Maya. He was taking care of his service. His name was Vishnu Sharma. He was taking care of a garden in South India, and he was just raising the flowers to offer to the Lord. And he was totally devoted to the Lord. And but one day, two society girls, courtesans, Prabhupada calls them prostitutes, but actually in Veda culture they were not like prostitutes that we see in the modern world, you know, street walkers trying to turn a trick so that they can get their next heroin fix or something like that. These are very highly educated ladies. They knew the 64 arts. They were, you know, they were the mistresses of the king. So they were quite up on the arts of Kama Shastra. So they were just relaxing from a journey. They were relaxing by the garden, and they were noticing this sadhu, how he was watering the plants, and then they started saying, "Well, here's one person who will never be." One of them said to the other, "said This is one man you'll never be able to entrap. You'll never be able to capture him." And the other one was very proud, and she said, "You just wait. Now he is chanting the name of Narayan. When I get through with him, he'll be chanting my name. He'll be chanting my name." So they made a bet. The two ladies made a bet as to who, if, you know, how long it would take, you know, if she'd be able to do it. So then the lady went away, and the one who said she would do it, she took off all her jewelry, all her fancy clothes, put on very simple clothes, and pretended she was a bhakti. And she came to the garden and said, "Oh, sadhu, you're such a great devotee. Can I help you in some way?" So then he said, he was very innocent. He said, "Sure, no, you can just, you know, pull out the weeds, and, you know, it's a garden. What else you do in the garden?" So she was gardening with him. And this went on for a long time, you know, weeks, and everything was still very, you know, above board. Then one day, the monsoon started. So it was raining like anything. And the sadhu, he went in under the cover and was dry. But the girl was still out there, and he felt sorry for her. And she was soaking wet. So he called her, "Please come." So she came under, but she was soaking wet. And you could pay, you know, when clothes get that wet, you could practically see everything, but there's the cloth over. So, you know, they were very close to each other, and he could see practically through her clothing. And next thing, you know, Cupid was captured. You know, his mind was captured, and then they had a, they became very intricately compromised. And this went on for some time until he was totally, you know, forgotten Krishna, forgotten his service, and was just totally entrapped by her. He was totally in love with her. Totally in love with her. And at this point, she disappeared. She left. Because these society girls, they're very expert. Their whole thing is how to entrap, you know, totally captivate the mind of a man, and then extract as much wealth from them as possible. That's the art that they know. So then she left. And he was completely disconsolate. So he started, like, looking every place for her. He went into the city, found her, and he was beating on her door. Beating on her door, you know. "Let me in, you know, it's me, I'm your lover," etc. She said, No. What have you got for me? Do you have anything for me?" He had already given everything that he ever had. He gave it to her. She wanted more. So he didn't have anything. So he's just, you know, at her door, crying, calling out her name. So at this point, this happened in Shivangam. At this point, the Lord and his Mula Murti, along with Ranganath and Ranganayaki, they were going by in the cart procession. And Ranganayaki said, "She's seeing, there's your devotee over there crying out some other person's name. You know, are you just going to leave him like that? So Ranganath smiled. I have a plan. So then, because this woman only wanted gold, wealth. So then he, in the temple, for offering, they had and for bathing, the deity had a very nice gold pot. They would bathe the deity in a gold pot with water, in the Kaveri. So then, one day, this Ranganath Swami stole the pot. He came to the door of the lady and he knocked on the door and he said, Vishnu Sharma has given this for you. You want something? Here, take this gold pot. And she was very happy. So the next day when Vishnu Sharma showed up, he was banging at the door, crying her name. She let him in. And they again had their conjugal activities. And he was very happy, like this. But then it didn't take very long for the temple authorities to find that there was a pot missing. A pot was missing. So then the king immediately sent his police officers to find out, where everything was. And he found out that this girl, she's got it. So they immediately arrested her. But she said, no, I didn't take it. I didn't steal anything. This guy, Vishnu Sharma, he gave it to me. So then they went to Vishnu Sharma. He said, I don't know anything about this. And went back and forth. And finally, so they threw him in jail. Vishnu Sharma was thrown in jail. Specifically, according to Manu, thieves are punished very severely. What to speak of if you steal the deity's property? It's a serious, extremely serious offense with very grave punishments. Execution, torture. And Manu specifies that criminals, they should be punished not like with lethal injection where they just go to sleep. They should be punished in a public place in such a way that it inspires terror in the public when they see the execution. So it's not like, a little injection and you go to sleep. So that's what was in store for Mr. Vishnu Sharma. So anyway, the king went to sleep, and in his dream, Lord Ranganath told him, I stole the pot. He's innocent. Let him go. And Lord Ranganath explained the whole thing, how the girl had done this whole plot to get him in this situation, etc., etc. And so then the king, he went immediately to the jail, released Vishnu Sharma, and explained to him the whole thing, how the Lord had stolen the pot, given the pot to the girl, etc. And he went and arrested the girl. And he chastised her, that why have you entrapped this saintly person? He chastised her very severely. Then when Vishnu Sharma realized that the Lord stole the pot for him, and he did this whole thing, he became so mortified. So mortified at how fallen he had become. That the Lord had to go to all this trouble to wake him up and to bring him back. Because he felt that he was so contaminated that the only way that he could again, look himself in the mirror was if every day he took the water that had washed the feet of the devotees. That he would always be putting it on his head and drinking that water. So from that point on, he was called Bhakta Angarenu Alwar, the one who takes the water from the feet of the devotees. So the Lord is very anxious to have the souls come back to him. And the Lord has many devices for doing this. He comes himself, he has his various leelas. Shastras are there, surrender to me only, and he sends his preachers. But of all the methods, the most powerful, of course, is Lord Chaitanya's movement, right? This whole thing is simply, there's no killing of demons and like in the other leelas. The whole thing is simply to bring the devoted, to bring the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada is the great general in Lord Chaitanya's army. And he has given us the method of ensnaring and capturing the souls and to bring them back. He's got his book distribution, right? Prasadam distribution, Harinam Sankirtan, festivals, beautiful deity worship. All these are intended to bring the souls, to attract the souls and bring them back. A friend of mine, Murli Darbatar, who is the one of the chief archikas in Sri Rangam, I sent him Indradumna Swami's diary of a traveling preacher. So he commented to me that he was just amazed at the by reading the pastimes about the different ways that the Lord uses to drag his slaves back to him. Use the word slave, because dasa doesn't mean servant, it means slave. So how the Lord goes to so many different troubles to try to get the soul back. Because as Lord Krishna said to Gopal Kumar, says, I was praying, when will you give me your mercy and come back? So now we're going to have a book marathon soon, isn't it? Everybody's going to be having a national book marathon, right? It'll give everybody an opportunity to help Krishna be victorious. Because it says he is victorious, he feels victorious if he has brought a soul back, if he has been able to reclaim a fallen soul. So every time you distribute a book, you never know where it goes, who will get it, where it will end up. And one God brother, he was a mechanic. He was working on a car, and he found under the seat of the car a book. And he read it, he became a devotee. Another God brother, his mother worked at the Port Authority in New York City, where the devotees would regularly distribute books. They would take, the people would take the books, they didn't want to throw them in the garbage. So his mother knew that her son liked to read books. So she would collect the books out of the garbage, bring them home, he read them, became a devotee. You know Kundali? Kundali. Kundali. That was Kundali. That's by his mother picking books out of the garbage can. So even if somebody throws the books away, that's not the end. This person became a devotee by books out of the garbage can. And then there was an instance. Even somebody who may seem to be the most offensive or inimical person, there was one case in the early 80s in France that was for the Christmas marathon. Devotees would go to the trains. Just before the trains left, they would go onto the trains and distribute books. So this young girl, she was like, you know, late teens, early 20s, she was distributing books this way. So she came to this one gentleman and she gave him a Krishna book. He took the book, he was so angry, he ripped the book in half, and he threw it on the ground and stomped on it. And all the time he was rebuking this girl, calling her all ill names, selling these books, you know. He was just very... because she's some sort of a sect, a cult that he was in. And then, to make matters worse, he grabbed her by the hair, dragged her to the doorway of the train, and threw her off the train as the train was leaving the station. She fell to the ground, you know, and she was injured. You know, and all the devotees came, you know, and they were trying to take care of her. She was bleeding. I think she broke some bones. But it was the marathon, so like 2 days later, she was back out distributing books. So the man who did this to the girl was going from Paris to Spain to Madrid in the train. And when he got home, he showed the book that he had torn in half, showed it to his wife. explained how this stupid girl was distributing books, you know, and how he had chastised her, ripped up the book, thrown her off the train, etc., and he put the book on the table. Then his wife, she had to go shopping, and he had to go to the office, and like that. And so the maid came into the house, and she saw this torn book, and she thought, you know, that the book was important, so she tried to put the book back together as good as possible. You know, all the pages. She went and put it in his library. Because she didn't know the whole story. She just put it in the library like that. So then, not too long, if you go fast forward a couple of years, his wife, who he dearly loved, died suddenly in a car wreck. And he was totally shocked. His wife, who he had this focus on, she died. And then his children turned out to be very bad. You know, one was a drug addict, the daughter was with some low-class guy, and the son was a drug addict. So he had nobody there. And his wife had died. And he was totally distraught. He was thinking of suicide. And he was then thinking about the Bible. He went in the window's bookshelf looking for the Bible, and instead he saw this Krishna book. You know, and so he pulled that down. And he started reading it. And he started reading about the part how Vasudeva was explaining to Kamsa about how the soul, reincarnation, how the worm, you know, just as the soul transfers from one body to the next, how the inchworm, by one inch at a time, it moves. That simile is given, that metaphor is given. So he was, instead of going to work, he stayed home and he read the whole book. In fact, he didn't go to work for several days. He was the president of a bank. He was a very wealthy man, president of a bank. And so he just stayed home and he read the whole book because it gave him some solace that what had happened to his wife, and where she was gone. Now she knew where she was gone, that she had, though the body was gone, her wife was still existing. So then in the back of the book, there was an address, phone number for the Paris temple. He called up the Paris temple, and they informed him that there was a temple in his home city, in Madrid. So he went to the temple. You know, he's a banker, three-piece suit, briefcase. He goes to the temple, and the temple president opens the door, and this man is on his knees, weeping. He's weeping, he's crying. And he was begging for forgiveness. He was saying how he didn't know that this girl was distributing this knowledge. You know, please forgive me. I did so many bad things. And the temple president doesn't know what's going on. There's a man here in a three-piece suit on his knees crying. He thinks maybe this guy's a little bit nuts. And so he invites him into the office. And so the man again explains how he beat this girl and he did so many bad things. But you know, he didn't realize that the value, the treasure that this book had. He said, is there any way I can help? Any way I can do to repay for what I've done, you know? So the temple president was like a little bit, you know, bewildered what to do. And the man pulled out his checkbook and he wrote a big check. And he gave it to the temple president. And then after that, every Sunday, he would come because he had no family left. He would come to the temple. And after some time, he began taking up the process, chanting, following the regular principles. And next thing you know, he gave up being a bank president. He moved into the temple. And they made him the accountant. Temple accountant. Then the Christmas marathon came. And he asked, can I go and distribute books? And they thought, well, he was older. He was a little bit older. So they thought, well, give him a chance. So he also went out on book distribution. He became very good at it. He was a good book distributor. And he just gave up being an accountant. He would just go out and distribute books. Then, after this, there was a big, it's like we recently had a festival here in the temple for all Brahmacharis. So that zone, they had a large, it was like an all-zonal festival at Villa Vrindavan in Italy. So all the book distributors, everybody went there. So he went there and he searched out the girl who he had beaten, and he begged her forgiveness for what he had done. But she was more surprised than anybody that the man who had beaten her had become not only a devotee but a book distributor himself. So you never know what will happen when you distribute a book. And it's the sacrifices that devotees make for Krishna are not forgotten. Just like we were speaking yesterday about how Jatayu, he made the supreme sacrifice. He gave his life in order to attempt to save Mother Sita. But though he was not successful in stopping Ravana from saving Sita, because he had made that supreme sacrifice, Lord Ram personally came. Lord Ram was shedding, he was weeping because Jatayu had done this. And he personally performed Jatayu's funeral rites. So who can say that Jatayu was a failure? He was supremely successful because he had, you know, Krishna is not an ingrate. He's not an ingrate. Ingratitude is amongst the worst of sins. There was an incident that displayed how bad ingratitude, how bad it is to be an ingrate. There was once a Brahmin who was very poor, but he had a friend who was a crane. And the crane said, why are you so morose? What's the problem? So he explained, you know, I have to get my daughter married, and I have to do this, and I have no money, etc. And the crane said, no problems. I have some friends, some rakshasas, they live in the forest, they have mystic powers, they'll give you wealth, whatever you want. Just go and ask them. But the Brahmin was a little bit, you know, a little bit nervous. Rakshasas, you know, they're a little dangerous. But he was poor and he needed the money, so he went to the forest looking for the rakshasas. Usually it's the other way around, rakshasas are looking for you, but he was looking for them. So as soon as he appeared, they thought, great, lunch is being served. You know. But he, before they could kill him, he told that he was the friend of the crane, and they came, you know, that's the reason he came. He says, oh, any friend of the crane's is a friend of ours. Whatever you want, you can have. So he explained, and they said, don't, no problem, no worry. By the time you get home, you'll have all the wealth. Everything is now gold at your house now. So he went back, and everything was like, so like when Sudama Vipra came back and they couldn't recognize his house, it was his former hut was now a palace. So now the Brahmin was very wealthy. So a little while later, his friend the crane came back. And in due course of conversation, they got into it. Now the Brahmin was very puffed up, he had so much money. In due course of conversation, an argument ensued. And in the heat of anger, the Brahmin killed the crane, the one who was his friend. So the Rakshasas, because they had mystic potency, they could understand that their friend had been killed. So they immediately showed up on the scene. They said, the only reason we didn't kill you and eat you and instead gave you wealth because you were a friend of our friend, the crane. And because of him, you have this wealth and you have your life. And you're such an ingrate, you killed him. So then the Rakshasas, they killed him.
But because he was an ingrate, they wouldn't eat him. So they took his body, and outside the outskirts of the city, there were some cannibals. And they brought him up and said, here, you can eat this man. And the cannibal said, well, you also eat men. Why aren't you eating him? Why are you giving him to us? So then they explain the whole story, and the cannibal says, oh, he's an ingrate? We don't eat ingrates. That's how bad ingratitude is, that even cannibals won't eat you if you're an ingrate. So Krishna is not an ingrate. He'll be very beholden to those who help him achieve victory in reclaiming the fallen souls. So, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes, Guru?
I want to ask, in the shloka, that this, to completely satisfy ourselves, should be without motivation. So what do you mean that
I heard the key, apratihata yayatma suprasiddhiti. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self.
Yeah, the devotional service should be without reason?
No, no, without motivation in the sense of not for any selfish purpose for ourselves, not like for we want money or something like that, you know, like, you know, give us this day our daily bread. And when I was in school, child, exams came. You know, like as the vice president of the United States said, because they banned prayer in school. So the vice president said, as long as there are exams in school, there's going to be prayer in school, because the students are always praying. So I was one of those also. I was praying. But after I thought, this is not good. I shouldn't be praying to God for something like this. I should be praying to God for how I could serve Him, not for getting something for myself. Of course, as is explained in the second canto, you can also pray for things. That's also accepted. But it's not pure devotional service. In pure devotional service, we don't pray for something for ourselves. We don't serve God for any reason, for any selfish reason. We serve God simply to please Him. That's unmotivated devotional service. Is that clear?
Yes.
Okay.
And the last question, what means crane? What is a crane?
A crane, a bird.
Oh, a bird.
A bird. You know, like they have very long legs, and they stand in the water looking for fish. Like Bakasura was a crane. I don't know what that's English. I mean, in English they're called cranes, like a stork or something like that. Any other questions, comments? Everybody going to go on book distribution? Vishwambar? Going to go on book distribution? Oh, you have a question? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it really hurts me when these people doesn't want to recognize the Lord. It's very difficult to make them understand, I know, but at least...
Or you can help those who are distributing books.
That's right. I was thinking one day I should post a book around.
Like I said, it takes eight people to put one man on the front line. So if you can't go on the front line, you can help those who are going. There's always some way of helping. Any Vishwambar, any suggestions about books? Yes, Prabhu? Well, in a war effort, you know, this all, you know, so many support staff is required. For example, to put one airplane up in the air, one fighter pilot is a whole ground crew. You know, so not everybody, you know, there's a lot of support staff is required. You just can't put the whole country on the front line. Who's creating the ammunition? Who's building the weapons? You know, logistics, who's manning the nursing home, you know, the hospitals. So a lot of support staff is required. And same thing in Lord Chaitanya's army. Somebody's taking care of, you know, the deities. Here, who's serving the deities, how will you be inspired unless you come back to the temple, see beautiful deities? You know, somebody's cleaning the temple, somebody's cooking. Everyone is important. But to put that man on the field requires so many people to help. Isn't it? It's practicality. It's the reality of the situation. So, any comment, Vishwambar? No? No, but you're in the front lines, man. Are you going to go out this time?
No.
You're not going to go out? You're not going. You're saving yourself up for Christmas? Okay. But you, how about some of your experiences with book distribution? Some of your experiences. You can share some of your experiences.
I'm sure you had more experience
than me. No. You were telling us, I remember what you said last time, that because you had distributed quite a few books, and you said that your technique was that you prayed to your super soul and to his super soul, and this way the person was outnumbered 3-1. You, your super soul, and his super soul against him. And that's your secret, your soul, your super soul, and his super soul against him. He's outnumbered. I still remember, I quote that different places. All right. Srimad Bhagavatam Grantaraj Ki Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.